Hello and welcome to the MB Om podcast, where you will learn to master the business of yoga with guests from around the world who have experienced becoming successful yoga teachers, studio owners, and much more. Now, here's your host, Amanda Kingsmith.
Hey guys, welcome to the first episode of the MB Om podcast. I'm super excited that the podcast is live for your listening pleasure. It's been months of creating, concocting, interviewing, and learning. So I'm really excited to be sharing everything that I've learned from amazing yoga teachers with you guys. And we're going to kick this podcast off with an incredible interview with Jeff Ma. And so Jeff Ma is a pretty well-known Canadian-based yoga teacher. He's based out of Western Canada, specifically Calgary, Alberta, and then now Canmore, Alberta. And he's been teaching for just over 15 years. He began in Calgary and then purchased the studio in Canmore called the Yoga Lounge, where he now resides with his partner Hillary and their two children, who are 3 years old and almost 1 year old. So between running a studio, being an amazing yoga teacher, and then being a dad and a family man, Jeff is super, super busy. And because of that, I'm so appreciative that he took the time to sit down with me and just talk about all things yoga. He's had such a cool journey as a yoga teacher, and it's really incredible to hear everything he's done and everything he's learned, and then to be able to take all of that and share it with you guys. And I met Jeff in July of 2014 when my boyfriend and I moved to Canmore, Alberta. We had been living in Calgary for an extended period of time, and after taking a trip to South America for 6 months, we decided we wanted a change of pace. And I got a job at Lululemon, and, you know, this cool-looking yogi dude's picture was on the wall, and everyone there was raving about how great his classes were. They're like, you have to check out Jeff Ma. You have to go to the Yoga Lounge. It's such a cool studio. And I was like, okay, yeah, sure. Like, I love yoga. I'm obviously down for that. So I went to check out one of Jeff Ma's classes with, you know, zero expectations, other than I was told he was pretty cool. And I was immediately floored by the style of his class, the way he held space in the room. It was the most unique and different and strange yoga class I'd ever done before. I went to a flow and restow class, so I expected, you know, your standard sort of sun salutation A, sun salutation B, some standing sequences, balances, cooling it down, holding some restorative poses on the ground for a while, shavasana, bam, I'm out of there. It was absolutely nothing like that. We did, you know, partner work, and we used every single prop in the book. And that's just one of the reasons that Jeff is such an amazing yoga teacher. And I could basically talk on and on about how amazing I think Jeff is. I'm just going to kickstart this interview and let you guys decide that for yourself. So here you go. Here's Jeff Ma. All right. Thanks, Jeff, so much for coming on the podcast today. No, you have a 3-year-old and a 10-month-year-old at home, so life is crazy, and I know that. So I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to come on the show and talk to me about your journey as a yoga teacher. And
sure, no problem. Thank you.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting. I was thinking about it before doing this, how, I mean, I've known you for about a year and a half now, which is not that long in the whole scheme of things, but I mean, a year and a half, and I've worked for you for almost a year now, and I don't really know much about your journey as a yoga teacher.
Oh, okay, sure. Well, fire away, and I'll try my best to illuminate that.
Where did it all start? Like, how did you get into yoga?
I got into yoga, oh man, this was a long time ago. Basically, what happened was this was 15 years ago, about around that time frame. And what happened was, I was working as a mechanical engineer just a couple years out of school. And I had a pretty good injury from snowboarding that wasn't really healing. It sort of plateaued. Mm-hmm. And at the time, another friend of mine who I went to engineering with, he was working downtown. He's like, hey, I've been checking out this thing that's happening downtown. It's kind of cool. It's called yoga. And maybe you should come check it out. I was like, all right, I could probably do something. Maybe I can't really do my other sports that I'm super in tune with and happy about, so I'll do something different. And mm-hmm. so basically I drove down that one night from work and went to a yoga class at this place called Yoga in Motion down in Calgary, just off of 5th Street, which actually is now, I believe, Yoga Passage.
Still, oh, sweet.
Name. Yeah.
Oh, I love Yoga Passage. That was where I always practiced in Calgary.
Yeah.
And was it sort of like this instant connection with the practice, or was it sort of like a gradual thing? Like, what did you think about it after your first class?
My first class was actually pretty interesting. I didn't know a lot about yoga at all. I came from a climbing background, so I had a lot of appreciation for body movement. And so I just showed up probably way too early for class and and borrowed a mat. And then I was one of the first couple of people, and I just rolled my mat out, sort of, you know, like the beginner spot. So not in the front couple rows and a little bit off to the side. And for some strange reason, I just sort of started, you know, you kind of go back to like other things you do. It's like, oh, I guess I should warm up. So I just started doing these half baked stretches, because like there's a couple other people that came there early that were really serious, and they were kind of like, you know, doing the pre yoga before the yoga. I was like, okay, well. And so, but after that, you know, the class started to kick in, and it was in it was like an Ashtanga modified class. So it was a physical practice, and it was trucking along pretty fast. And because at that time I was like, what, maybe 24 or 25 years old, mm-hmm. you know, like a very fast athletic practice totally spoke to me.
Yeah.
And it was hard, but at the same time, because I was like, you know, young and strong, I could do a lot of stuff pretty much off of the get go. And once we hit this crazy nap scenario at the end called Shavasana, I was like, what the heck? And then you kind of have this time to like check out, and then, you know, there's like the big rush of endorphins from doing something new that feels good. I was pretty hooked off the get go. Yeah, I had a great experience. I started going a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. Mm-hmm.
So it's just like immediately like, this is amazing. This is cool. Like, I want to do this thing.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, like it was just, the interesting thing too is because I was rocking the desk job so hard and with the shoulder injury, like a lot of that, I wasn't able to climb anymore at the same time either. So like, and we're here, we are kind of, I was in a perfect situation looking for something to do. Mm-hmm. And this was just really, physical, and the crazy thing, because there's movement and there's more movement than my typical desk life, my shoulders started to get better, and because there's like positive results from that, that totally helped. And you know, it doesn't hurt that when you go to the yoga studio, everyone was really friendly, and this was a point in time when like yoga in Calgary, especially the power yoga scene, was really starting to take off. So there was a buzz and an excitement, and it was just, yeah, like at that time, that studio was ground zero for a lot of really good people and lots of really good energy. And it was really fun to be a part of that off the start.
Mm-hmm. That's super cool. Mm-hmm. And then when did you sort of like make the transition into like from, I really like this practice, to I want to teach other people this?
Oh, that was an interesting situation. Like kind of going back to your previous question, like how much I fell in love with the practice. Basically, right off the get-go, I was going tons. Like, mm-hmm. I was probably practicing like 5, 6, 7 times a week.
It wow.
was something I totally love. I'm a bit obsessive about things. And so if there's something I really love, I'm a big fan of trying to like get good at it.
Yeah.
And so I was practicing like crazy. And within about a year, what had happened was, one of the teachers at Yoga in Motion, who's one of the teachers that I first started with, he decided to open his own yoga studio. Not downtown, but down in Canyon Meadows.
Okay.
And he was, looking for people to teach for him. And so he had this brand new studio, and he's like, hey, you know, like, I'm going to like start my new yoga studio, and I've got this teacher training program. I've got some teachers already, but I want to train up some new people. you should come. You should be one of those folks. And at the time, I was like, yeah, I'm not really interested in that. Like, I've got my regular job. That's what I went to school for. That's what I did, like, 5 years of university for. Mm-hmm. It pays really well. And all this social conditioning, right? But at the same time, I felt just by practicing so much within that year, I'd kind of plateaued in my yoga practice.
Yeah.
It was sort of like I was doing so many classes. And at that point, you know, the way teaching in the yoga scene there was, it went to a certain point, but it wasn't like I was hungry for more, and I wasn't getting that as much as I could in a regular studio setting. And so I thought, well, you know what? I'll humor you. I'll take the teacher training because it sounds like the curriculum's a little more advanced than what's going on. I'm going to learn about all this other stuff that I don't get a chance to learn about in class. And, I'm not going to teach for you.
Yeah. I love that. Like,
no problem.
I love that, like, way of thinking, like, oh, I'll humor you and take your teacher training.
he wanted at the time, like, some, like, commitment. Hey, like, you know, you should try this and you could be one of the teachers. And I was like, well, we'll see.
That's like, but I did want, such yeah. a different, like, it, that seems so different from the way it is now. Like, having done my teacher training in the last year, I feel like it's like this kind of dog eat dog world where it's like, you have to be really good to get a job in a lot of places.
Yeah, for sure. Like, if you want to talk about that side of things, it's a very different, it's a very, very, very different yoga landscape. I was like Amanda, I was totally in the right place at the right time. Like when I came out of my training, there was Yoga in Motion downtown, and then there was like one or two other yoga studios at the time that were more popular, catering to like the budding power yoga movement. Like the Iyengar studios, they've been around for like ever. But like the power yoga scene is really starting to kick in. Mm-hmm. And I was at ground zero, and I was a guy instructor. Like everyone else that was teaching at the time, by and large, except for a handful of people, they were women. And so I think because of that, I'll be perfectly candid, that probably opened up some opportunities for me, because like studio owners would be like, well, every instructor on our roster, is female, and we'd like to mix it up a little bit. And, you know, we find that guy instructors have a different sort of vibe, and they also like sometimes are more accessible to like male students, what have you not. And they're like, and you kind of know what you're doing. Get in there.
You're kind of okay at this yoga thing.
Yeah. And at the time, you know, It turned out, you know, much to my chagrin, that during that teacher training, it was like, I'll humor you and I'll like, you know, I'll just take the training. There was a component where we were assisting. And so that was a pretty low pressure way for me to work in that form. And then there was a couple moments where, you know, like, hey, like there's some teaching components here. You have to teach like a certain amount, and you have to like do this in front of people, like real people. So like I got paired with a mentor, and the mentor would be, okay, well, you're going to teach the sun salutations, and you take care of the first 15 minutes of class, and I'll hop in. Mm-hmm. And I remember those like first 15 minutes being exceptionally terrifying, because at the time I was a horrible public speaker. But by the time those 15 minutes were up, like I was ready to keep going. So it was fascinating. So, and then from there, it just kind of sparked the love for teaching.
That's awesome. So throughout this process, you were still working your full-time job as an engineer.
Yeah.
And then did you start taking teaching jobs on the side, like doing like part-time yoga teaching, full-time engineer? At what point did you transition into that full-time yoga teacher?
Yeah, like, so what happened was, this was a gradual process. Like I did the teacher training, and then I was right away teaching a bit already at my friend's studio. And so, you know, that was like one or two gigs. And then promptly right after that, you know, like I've started to have a little bit of success. And then so other studio owners contacted me. And then I was doing like 3-4 classes a week. And then I was also having fun teaching the class. So then I actually started pursuing teaching opportunities as well.
Yeah.
And before I knew it, I was working my regular job. And then I was probably, at one point, I was teaching like 10 times a week. And which was insane.
That's mental.
Like, but my regular job, like, I'll be perfectly candid. I kind of took in my quote unquote regular job, shifted it to like 4 days a week. And then from there, And even then, like, that side of my working life was not, was probably not, my most engaged time of the day. I would, like, show up, I would do my engineering job, and then inevitably I would be teaching once or twice a night. And then on weekends I'd be teaching as well. And after a while, there just came a point where I was doing a lot. Like, that's a lot. Like, you're working a semi-regular or 80% regular gig, and then you're teaching like 10 classes. And at that point, things were going south where I was working at my engineering company. And that's like a totally long story, but basically what happened was the company was going down.
Yeah.
And I had been engineering for about 5 years already. So 5 years out of school, and kind of hit that quarter life crisis point where it's like, I really don't resonate with doing this so much anymore. So I'm going to quit this. And in the meantime, I'm just going to teach yoga for a while, and I'm going to figure out what I want to do with my life, and I'll go from there.
Cool. Mm-hmm. What did your, like, family and friends sort of think of that? Like, did you have a lot of support from them, or was it sort of this, like, you're an engineer, like, this is pretty amazing, what are you doing teaching yoga?
It was a fascinating thing. I had great support from my friends, right? Mm-hmm. I had, like, incredible support from my friends, because a lot of my friends were engineers, and they hated their lives, and I was actually, like, making a move. You know?
Yeah.
And people thought, you know, and people thought that was kind of audacious, but they respected the thing, and they thought it was kind of inspiring, right? And on the family side, I didn't really have any of that support. And so basically, I really was immersed in the support of my friends instead. And to be perfectly honest too, man, that, like, when I made that transition to, like, teaching full time, I was so conditioned from my upbringing that I didn't fully expect that I was going to be teaching or become a career yoga teacher. Mm-hmm. I was expecting that, you know, I'm just going to do this in the meantime until I figure out what it is I want to do. And I'm going to go back to school and study something else and get, like, another quote unquote real job or, like, you know, legitimate career. And that will be my pathway.
Yeah.
So that's what happened for a while. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy how much, like, school, society, you know, parents, all these inputs around us kind of really shape what we think we have to do.
Oh yeah. It's insane but I think at the end of the day, like, pretty much all of us have this deep seated desire within us to have the approval of our parents.
Oh, totally.
And to actually, like, and if your parents are the kind of parents that have very defined opinions on how things are supposed to be. Like, I'm first generation Canadian, so my parents have endured a life of crazy hardship and have immigrated from China. And for them, you know, the bar was set at a different height. It's like, if I had, you know, if your belly is full and there's money in the bank, like, life is golden. What more do you want? And for myself, you know, this next generation is like, well, you know, having a full belly and an empty heart, that doesn't seem so great.
Yeah.
You want to move forward. And then chances are, you know, like, my kids will want even something different. And perhaps it's something they'll understand, perhaps not. But yeah, the parental approval piece, super hard. And so, yeah, that's why you bank on your friends, right? Like, friends are God's way of apologizing for your family.
That's a pretty great quote.
Yeah, I've heard that a couple places.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And so, you were teaching a lot, kind of anticipating to get sort of another, like, quote unquote, like, big boy job.
Yep.
And then at what point did that sort of transition to, like, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to just keep doing this?
Oh, well, that was a process. Like, just to show, like, how, like, Asian conditioned I was, I had this crazy epiphany that I was going to, like, go back for school.
Yeah.
Because, like, engineering wasn't great enough. I was like, I'm going to go back and I'm going to go into med school.
Oh my, so med school. Doctor, yeah, like, and an engineer. And a yoga teacher.
Yeah, well, like, you know, like, being a doctor is kind of like being a yoga teacher. You got to help people, right? And you got to, like, and what happens is hilarious, right? Because, like, this whole med school path, it was like, it's so hard, but at the same time, it's so easy. And yeah. I know there's probably med students will be listening to this, and some of them will probably agree, and probably some of them will think I'm just, like, totally full of crap. But it is so hard to get in, but when you get in, like, you've got it made in the shade.
Yeah.
Like ice cold lemonade. Because a lot of things happen, like, when you get into med school, like, there's instant status, there's instant respect. Livelihood in a lot of ways is assured to be on a higher income. Like a lot of those things that people like and that I like, and especially I really liked at the time,
yeah.
Those trappings come automatically. Like, you know, you tell someone you're a doctor, and by and large, people will typically start with a positive connotation.
Yeah, totally.
Right.
And it's not so like, you went to school for like a lot of years. Like, you know, a lot of things, like you must be an important person.
Yeah. And you must be a good person because you're a doctor. Like only like good people want to be doctors.
Yeah,
which
totally.
By and large, I think it's still true. And,
yes.
But what happened was along that process, I went back to school. Right. And so I was teaching a lot. And then I was taking these crazy, like, online courses through Athabasca University. And so remote, so not even online. Like, yeah, this is like 10 years ago. So like online is more like you sign up online, but they would send you like a cardboard box full of stuff. And then you would go to like a testing center and write your test. And so I was doing like all these courses, like biology, right? I haven't done biology since high school. and here I am like taking biology classes and then taking an English class, which was amazing. Right?
Yeah.
That was just stupendous. But just taking all these classes. And eventually there came the point where I had to write the MCAT. Which is like the med school admittance exam.
Yeah.
And it was insane. It I think the way it works is you show up, if I recall, you write like a 90-minute, 2-hour exam, then you have like a half hour break, you write another 2 hours on a different topic, you have like a lunch break, you write a 2-hour exam, you have like a short half hour break, and then you like write another section. And
oh
so it's like
God.
8 grueling hours. And the topics are nuts, right? Like I remember the first topic is like physics, like no problem. Like I came from mechanical engineering. I got the physics dialed. And then there's like a writing comprehension section. I thought I did pretty good on that. And then there came a part where it was like the hardcore biology.
Yeah.
Right. The hardcore biology and like organic chem at a level that I had not seen before.
Organic chem.
Yeah. And like, not not the simple, like, you know, cheesy organic chem. Like, oh, that's like a double bond. That's a ketone. You know, it was like, blah, 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 blah. Look at these chem. Like, and then biochem. Like, and so I remember getting my MCAT grade and I'd scored pretty darn good. Like, I was pretty proud of myself. And I could see, like, you know, like these sections were really good, but the bio side, it was not up to par.
Yeah.
And for me to get in, it would have meant, you know, doing the test again. And by that point, Hillary and I, we were living in Toronto. Hillary's my wife.
Yeah.
Or partner or whatever you want to call her. And
whatever
and
you want to call her.
I don't know. We've been engaged for like 7 years now. So I guess I call her like my perfect.
Wait, are you guys not actually married?
We are not actually married. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I just assumed you guys are married.
No, like according to the law, by all, like for all intents and purposes, we're married, but we're not formally married.
I mean, that's like talking about that is like the law and stuff. That's just a whole other podcast. So
yeah, for sure. And that's like, yeah, you know, we could totally talk about that sometime. But yeah, but basically what happens is when we were in Toronto, I was studying at another studio, Downward Dog, and there's two teachers there, Ron Reed and Diane Bruni. And they are incredible teachers. Anyone that's ever in the Toronto area, I highly recommend you try and seek them out. And Ron totally took me under his wing, and I did like a training with him as well. And Diane was just nothing but kindness to me. And basically, I saw these two people who were a little bit older than me, and they were making it happen. They were like rocking. They were rocking the yoga scene. Like they were teaching. They were relevant. They were in community. They had like they were running a studio at that time that was immensely successful. So they had a livelihood that could support them, and I just saw that and I realized that rather than me being like such a pussy and wanting to like you know follow the tried and true easy hard path of going to med school, it's like I already like doing what I do.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to just like man up and pull up the bootstraps and figure out how to like make that work. And so that's when, you know, I was like, that's it. I'm done this MCAT and I'm done this med school business. I'm going to start figuring out a way to make this work.
Good for you. It's so interesting that it's like this difference between, you know, being a yoga teacher and writing an MCAT after you have an engineering degree and going to med school. It's like, you know, thinking about the hard route being the yoga teacher.
Yeah, it's kind of hilarious. But, you know, I was having like panic attacks. Like, well, what if I get into med school? Like, will I still be able to teach yoga? Because like, there must be a way I can like be some sort of doctor where my schedule still allows me to teach yoga. And then that's when I just realized that I was being completely insane.
Yeah.
I was just like,
yeah, you know, like what's actually like calling you and what you actually want to do in that case. When you're like, can I get my patients up on the table? Can we just do like a little down dog here?
Yeah, exactly. I need a strap.
I'm going to need a set of props in the corner
exactly.
of my room.
Yeah, block, yoga block, stat. Right. So.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, so that began that journey. Mm-hmm.
And so you just kind of dove in like full-time teacher just from that point?
I dove in full-time teacher, and then eventually I got into a situation where I became a part owner of a studio in Calgary, and that eventually fell apart, and then then became the opportunity to be out in Canmore, and so now I get to run the yoga lounge and I live in the Bow Valley and life is pretty sweet.
Yeah, definitely.
Totally.
And that's something that I want to touch on because something with the podcast is I want people who have come out of a yoga teacher training to realize that there's so many different options for them. And especially, mm-hmm. you know, just hearing that story and that, you know, you had an engineering degree and just went this completely different direction, but then also taking it from, you know, teaching for somebody else's studio and then running your own and kind of mm-hmm. what that's sort of like.
Sure. Well, I remember one of the things when I was talking to Ron Reed of Downward Dog, mm-hmm. and I was just asking about his life. You know, like I had this mentor here and he was like filling me in and he said, you know, like, eventually, Jeff, like, I was, like, teaching all over the place, and for my, and he'd been doing that for a while, and then after a while, I just felt that I needed to, like, travel less.
Mm-hmm.
So he tried to set it up so that, you know, he could just be teaching at one place, right? And it just happened eventually that he decided to make that one place his own place.
That's cool. Right?
And away he went. And so, for me, I'd been teaching for professionally or full time for at least like probably 3-4 years. And I decided at that point that I wanted to like settle more into like one place or less places if I could to consolidate.
Yeah. Were you driving kind of all over the place teaching at quite a few different studios?
Oh yeah, it was a traveling roadshow for sure, which I think is like a really good thing, especially in the beginning of one's yoga teaching career, because you get exposed to all sorts of different crowds, all sorts of different audiences. You have to adapt to the various cultures of where you're teaching. I've taught it all. Like I've taught in like, you know, crazy fitness clubs where there's a totally different mentality. I've taught in like super high end studios. Where people are incredibly dedicated to the practice and they want like authentic teachings at, you know, mm-hmm. at the best level you can deliver. I've taught at places in the middle, like that whole spectrum. And honestly, being able to like teach at all those different places really made me good. It just allowed me to be super adaptive. And I felt that was awesome. Right. And especially in the beginning, when I was teaching, there's crazy gigs, right? You're doing like community center gigs, like fitness club gigs. You're doing corporate gigs. I remember my first teaching gig, like steady. I was still working as an engineer,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I was doing my yoga teacher training at the time. And I taught my coworkers 2 to 3 times a week for a year.
Wow.
It was nuts. Like, it'd be like, I can't remember, was it Tuesday, Thursday, or Monday, Wednesday, Friday? It'd be like lunchtime, and it'd be like me and like my coworkers. There's like a younger division of people there.
Yeah.
We'd all show up, we'd push the tables back in one of the conference rooms, and I would like teach something. And
that's so cool.
It was cool. That's how I had the same audience of people. I was working with 2 to 3 times a week for a whole year. And so you can, like, when it's the same people, you learn a lot.
Yeah.
And you learn, and you get a lot of practice in a short period of time.
Yeah. It'd be so cool to, for them too, I'm sure, to see you grow as a teacher.
Oh yeah, for sure. And then that's probably one of the reasons why they were so supportive when I was like ready to make the leap out. It was a good thing. But yeah, like if you want to talk more about the transition of more teaching, like give me some more questions and I'll try my best to let people know all the mistakes I've made.
Or the things that you've done right.
Yeah, there's been a few things, but there's also been some big mistakes for sure.
Yeah. Getting into, becoming, were you a partner in a yoga studio?
Yes. And so what happens is at the time, I taught at the studio a bit before, before I'd gone to Toronto, mm-hmm. and had a pretty good feeling, I think, with the owner. Mm-hmm. And so when I came back, I was like, okay, well, I've got more training. I'm coming back. I wrote that MCAT. I know I'm not going to go down that path. I want to see the next level. What I thought in my eyes was the next level of yoga teacher for me. It was settling down for the studio. Yeah. And so there's a couple places that I kind of put out feelers towards. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine was opening this one studio in Marta Loop, Yoga Mandala.
Yeah.
But at that point, there's already two people. Two people are in it already. And so a third, there's just too many cooks in the kitchen and the numbers weren't going to work. And then I went back to this hot studio that I taught a bunch at, and they were looking for someone to come in. And so I bought into that business and started from there. And thus began a really crazy, crazy 3 years of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
that was bonkers.
I know from talking to you outside of this podcast, mm-hmm. I know that didn't end the best for you.
For sure.
I don't know how many details you want to get into that.
I think we can talk about it a bunch for sure.
Basically
what happened was, I learned a lot there about people and really when it comes to something I knew very little about business and basically I made some assumptions about who I was working with. And I think one of the biggest assumptions was, this person does yoga, they must be straight up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we must be compatible because they like yoga, I like yoga, this must all work out. Mm-hmm. And really that was a big mistake. And to actually get into business with someone, the business side is so different from the yoga side.
Yeah.
And when you're in business with someone, it's a totally different gig, and especially partnerships, right? Most partnerships are sinking ships.
Yeah.
I'll be perfectly candid. Like most partnerships, especially business partnerships, unless both people are, on the very, very similar pages and roles are super, super defined and they're actually compatible as human beings as well, mm-hmm. with similar values. If that's not the same, it's really tough. And the other thing too was this person had started the studio and seen it through some crazy times. And I came in, and when I came in, we took it to the next level.
Yeah.
Right. But having said that, if someone starts a business, they have a different sense of propriety.
Yeah, totally.
And so it's kind of I started this business.
It's mine, even though you bought in. Yeah.
Like you've bought in. But it's still mine, right? And then the other big mistake that I made too was legally it wasn't mine. When you buy something, when you only own 30% of something, it's not really yours.
Yeah.
And I learned that mistake the hard way. And so even though I've helped take this studio to the peak, right? And I think probably lots of folks during that time in Calgary would probably look at the Bodhi Tree. That was the student Bodhi Tree Yoga Center.
Yeah.
As huge. At the end of the day, there was a personality conflict, and there's probably some jealousy involved because I was the one that, in a lot of ways, was like the heart and face of the studio and had taken to the next level. And there's probably, you know, feelings of being threatened. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, some stuff happened where it was believed that, you know, I'm gonna be perfectly candid. I'll put myself out there on the line. It was believed that I had stolen from the studio. So they cooked this up and fabricated some stuff. And rather than treating, you know, a business partner like a real business partner, like, hey, let's talk this through. What's going on?
Yeah.
Instead, like, you know, like Hillary and I came back from like vacation and we were ambushed and pushed out of the business. Right.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, and, you know, and it kind of goes to show like the relationship, you can have someone from the beginning to the end.
Yeah.
Right. Like at the beginning, you know, I thought I could totally work with this person. And honestly, during those 3 years, I was like, gosh, I guess working with someone must be this incredibly hard. Like, I guess this must be what it's like. Just if you work with someone, like, it must just be like constant struggle, constant like relationship maintenance, constant. And, but you know, at the end of the day, like, I should have seen the signs, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I was not meant to be working in that, in that working relationship. But at the same time, I didn't know better. And at the same time, I had thoughts of like, okay, well, maybe this is going to get better.
Yeah.
At the same time, I was like, I've put money into this, right?
Yeah, you've got a sunk cost.
Yeah, I've got a sunk. And at the same time, there's also that personal pride. It's like, yeah, you know, like the people I work with, like they're crazy, but you know, I freaking love the students and the classes are rocking.
It should be about when you're a yoga teacher.
On the yoga teacher hat, for sure.
Yeah. Right?
And then, but like, say, like studio owner hat, which is a slightly different other hat. Like, I didn't wear that hat very well. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, making that leap, like, if someone is actually thinking of making that leap from like being a yoga teacher to like a studio owner, that is a quantum leap of, mm-hmm. of different skills. And it's big. It's big.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it's sort of this thing that people get in their minds. And I feel like in general with a lot of people are like, oh, like I like yoga. I'll go get my yoga teacher training and I'll become a yoga teacher. Cause that's a really, it's kind of this like, oh, that's like the perfect lifestyle. And then it's like, oh, I'll own a yoga studio. Like that's a cool thing to do. And I feel like people don't realize that it's like, you know, it's still owning and running a business.
Oh, for sure.
Right? I mean, that is what it is. Like, you're running a business.
You're running a freaking hardcore business. It is honestly like the yoga business world is oftentimes some of the most complicated business landscape to navigate.
Yeah.
Because what happens is there's a lot of stereotypes and like pseudo beliefs out there. Like, oh, well, it's yoga. And so people have hangups about stuff like whether, you know, should your business be profitable? Should you always defer and like get walked all over? Like, you know, mm-hmm. avoid conflict. And even just, you know, like I think one of the most challenging and exciting things about running a yoga business is ideally, if you're working, say, with like yoga ethics, you know, like yamas, niyamas, you are trying to conduct yourself at the highest level. And when, you know, you're dealing with money, your own money running a business, the rubber really has to hit the road and you really get tested there.
Yeah.
Like after the whole like Bodhi-tree debacle and like, and all the legal stuff was sorted out and we came out on top, you know, I was actually thinking, I'm going to get back into the studio thing again. And a friend of mine was like, why the hell do you want to do that? and I was like, because I want to prove to myself that I can be a yoga studio owner and not go crazy.
Yeah.
Because a lot of folks, they, with very, very, you know, awesome intentions, they get into like running yoga studios and they go crazy. It's hard. Like you're teaching a ton. There's like the financial burden of the thing.
There's like your reputation's kind of on the line in more than just like your classes.
Sure.
Now you're kind of accountable for all your other yoga teachers as well.
And you want to do good for your students and you want to do good for your teachers, right? And so like a lot of folks, they take that on. They lose their minds. Like they lose their minds. And you just see like a lot of people get into studio ownership. After a couple of years, they make some really bad decisions, mm-hmm. right? Or they start conducting themselves in ways that are like kind of dubious, right? Kind of questionable. And it's an interesting thing. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to go back into the fire of that and see if I can do it better. And also prove to myself that, you know, yeah, you know, first time swinging, it was a bit of a strikeout, but I'm going to go back to the bat again and see if it can go better.
Yeah, that's super cool. Like, I think that's a really admirable thing. I know that when I kind of feel like I haven't done something as best as I could, I tend to kind of like cower away from it. And I'm like, I'll try something different. So that's something that I really admire.
Well, it depends. Like some things, you know, like some things probably make sense, you know, to like not go back into it again.
Yeah.
I think the way things ended for me with my first studio experience, I was like, that was in some ways out of my control.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when I got back in, you know, like it was the big thing that I learned. It's like, well, I'm not going to get a partner when I open my new studio.
Yeah. I think that's really good advice. So like, it's like, I don't know. It makes me think of people who are like, yeah, sure, I like barely know you, but like, let's just move in together. Like, yeah, I've like hung out with you like twice. Like, let's travel for 6 months together.
Yeah,
what are you doing?
I know. Well, like, money is a very powerful form of energy. And money is one of the biggest stressors on like any relationship, especially. And like, you can imagine when like you own a business, one of the primary reasons for your business is, and I'll be perfectly candid, is to make money. It's mm-hmm. got to make money so it can survive. So now you're like in this relationship with whoever it is you decide to, if you decide to run a business together.
Mm-hmm.
And every decision at the end of the day is going to probably be at least partially to heavily influenced about the financial side of things, right? And if people are not aligned on that, you know, you can get in big trouble. And if money ain't coming in enough to keep that business sustainable, it's going to get ugly in a hurry.
It's crazy what money does to people. It's like pretty shocking, actually.
Yeah, for sure. And to like lots of really well-intentioned people too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so how did the opportunity with the Yoga Lounge in Canmore come up? Like, was that something that you pursued or were you contacted about that?
Well, basically what happened was after like the legal stuff with the Bodhi Tree, I had been teaching a ton in Calgary, and I was actually starting to think about, okay, well, I'm going to open a studio in Calgary. All right. And it's going to like freaking like
just going to open a second studio in Kensington and it's going to be better.
You know what? It crossed my mind, right? But I'll be perfectly, I'm human, it's like, right? Like I remember at the time one of my mentors,
mm-hmm.
Hart Laser, who is an incredible teacher out of Montreal. Like I put him up there with like Ron and someone. I remember like I was like talking with him about this and Hart Laser, best name ever.
Yeah, he's in his 60s.
He has seen it all. And I remember him be like he had my back. He's like, you gotta freaking like get in there and open next door and freaking learn that fiatula. Like, he's being passionate as my friend.
Yeah.
But he's like, you know what? We're going to see where the rubber hits the road. Right. And, you know, but at the time there was like legal stuff going on and, you know, and then even in that legal stuff, you know, there was like non-competition clause stuff, like trying to get sorted out. But then what happened was this was like one of those classic examples where like, you could call it law of attraction. You could call it reaping what you sow.
Mm-hmm.
My friend Nicole Beaudry, who was the prior owner of the Yoga Lounge, I had actually taught in Canmore 8 mm-hmm. years ago. Like, that's how crazy I was in the beginning when I was teaching. I was teaching in Calgary, and I would actually drive up to the Yoga Lounge and teach, like, two classes, like, on Wednesday night or something like that. Like, drive through a snowstorm.
That's crash so in crazy.
I would teach to, like, you know, I'd work till 4:30, hop in the car, drive, like, the 110 kilometers, get into Canmore, like, teach the two classes. I would sometimes try and drive back, but if the weather was bad, I would like crash in Nicole's place, like on the couch, and then like wake up the next morning and like pin it back into Calgary to like go to work. And so like I did that for like 4, 5, 6 months, had a blast, but eventually realized that if I was going to keep that up, I was going to like get in the car accident.
Yeah, and, seriously.
So I had to let it go. But then fast forward 8 years down the road, you know, Nicole talking through like friend of a friend finds out that, you know, I'm I'm like homeless from a studio and I was looking for something, and she like called us up. It's like, hey, you know, like I've run the yoga lounge for like these last 8 years and I'm looking for a change in my life. Would you like to take it over?
Cool.
And that was just, wow, something that I did 8 years ago has spun around into like an opportunity for me now.
Yeah, that's really cool.
It was amazing. I remember after buying the suit, that's like another whole set of, you know, steps, et cetera. But I remember like coming back, like stepping back into the studio space, only this time, like as the owner, there are still like students that I'd worked with 8 years back.
Yeah.
And that was just super lovely. Yeah.
That's amazing. Cool. That's a really cool awesome thing about like the community in Canmore, I think, is some of those people are so dedicated.
Oh my God. Like the practitioners in Canmore, some of them are just the best. Like passionate, dedicated practitioners.
It's, yeah. It's pretty impressive. I really love it.
Yeah, for sure.
So you guys moved out to Canmore then? You guys made that transition like almost right away?
Yeah, like between, you know, like what we had to like hem and haw a bit about making the decision to move out to Canmore. It was not an easy decision because I had like a ton of plans laid out for Calgary.
Okay.
Like by that point, I was already like scouting out spaces and figuring out what I was going to do. And in Calgary, you know, like I have a, you know, big city, I have like a huge following there. The privilege of working with a lot of students. I was born in Calgary, you know, and so it's like hometown.
Yeah,
and,
totally.
Right. And then until I moved to Bow Valley, which was not hard in a lot of ways because, you know, like I'm super into mountain biking and I would be up in the mountains every weekend anyway.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, it's like, wow, I've always lived in a city, you know, living in a smaller town. I'm assuming the yoga community will be a little smaller than what's available in the big city. I have not really spent any time like expanding or growing like my experience of yoga in Canmore. It's all been in Calgary these last couple of years.
Yeah.
So in some ways it felt like another first start.
Cool.
But in the end, you know, it was probably one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life.
Yeah. And at what point was Clara born along that journey?
Oh, well, basically what happened was we bought the studio and realized at the point that renting in Canmore was like 0% vacancy.
Yeah.
So then we realized that, okay, well, if we're going to live here, we're going to have to buy a place, which was totally not on my radar. And so basically what happens, we moved, we took over the studio, we bought a house. And then we had Clara, and that all happened in the span of 5 weeks.
What?
Oh,
like,
I know.
Like Hillary was like already like 7 months pregnant.
Oh, Hillary was like, yeah, she was like seven months and a bit pregnant. And we actually thought that we would have Clara in Calgary and I would drive back and forth for a little while. And then, you know, after Clara was a couple months older, you know, then we'd like settle in and move to Canmore. But it just made so much sense that, you know, hey, if you bought the business.
If you've bought the business, like you're kind of committed to that place. So you might as well.
And we realized that we weren't going to get the level of support that we needed to run the studio.
Yeah.
Like, from afar for those first couple of months. So we just had to like hop right in. That was another very intense time of my life, like those 5 weeks, moving and like buying a house and having a child. It's pretty stressful. It's like taking over business. So yeah.
Oh my gosh, I love how you say it. No, like just so nonchalantly.
Well,
those 5 weeks were a little stressful. We bought a business, moved, and had our first child.
Well, at the time, I was probably going insane. I remember there were times that I was like totally, totally just going nuts with it all. But at the same time, you know, like I was, what did they say? It's like, you know, you're not given something that you can't handle.
Yeah.
Right. And these were all dreams that I wanted. Mm-hmm. Right. Like I wanted to be a dad. I didn't know anything about being a dad, but that was going to happen.
Yeah.
I wanted to be in the mountains.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be, you know, like leading a studio community again. Right. And, So, you know, sometimes at the end of the day, you just go, okay, like, this is what I want.
Yeah.
This is what I want. And, you know, and because that's what we wanted, we had like a lot of help, I think. We had like we came in and the teachers that were already teaching at the studio were so supportive and the students were so supportive, right? And yeah, and just, yeah, things eventually all came together.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Do you feel like coming into a studio that already sort of had a reputation made it easier to run the business, or do you think it would have been easier to start your own business and your own brand?
Okay. Well, if this is coming from the perspective of, say, a yoga teacher, perhaps wanting to, like, you know, if they honestly feel they want to take it to the next level, there's two ways. If you are totally kick-ass amazing and have a massive following, and by massive following, I mean, like, you know, you've been teaching for a while, a lot of people know about you, a lot of people avidly support you, and there's an area in your community that is underserved, okay, then you could, you know, which is what I was going to do in Calgary, you could, like, start up on your own, okay?
Yeah.
But that's a lot. Those are a lot of key pieces that have to be in there. And then one of the biggest pieces is that the whole underserved part.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
how do you differentiate yourself in a market that's already saturated? Yeah,
exactly. Like it cracks me up. Like people in Calgary, like a lot of them when they, and I think this is like the yoga teacher dream. It's the wrong dream for many, but it's like, I'm going to like be a yoga teacher. I'm going to own a yoga studio. I'm going to open it downtown, right? Because that's where it's like hip hop and.
I'm going to be the new lunchtime spot because there's not enough of those already.
right. And because it's cool. Like, I want to have a downtown business, you know, because I want to be like where it's like cosmopolitan and like for a lot of like markets and areas, I'm sorry, downtown's tapped out. Right? Mm-hmm. So Calgary's a great example, right? The studios essentially downtown that are still doing well, they're the ones that got in at ground zero by and large. Like they're ones that came in really early, right? Like there's a power to being first. There's a huge power to being first. Coming in number 10, number 11, you're going to be in big trouble. Mm-hmm. So then on the flip side is if there is an opportunity to like take over a yoga studio, just like it can be a good thing if it is, again, I think you gotta be a kick-ass teacher and you gotta be ready to bust your ass and you gotta be ready to have like, you know, the talent and the vision. But at the same time, that studio that you take over, it's gotta be doing relatively okay. Mm-hmm. And if it's not doing relatively okay, then get ready to like dig it out of the ground.
Yeah.
Which is what we did for the Yoga Lounge. Like Yoga Lounge, by the time we've taken it over, it's been around for like a long time. It started in 2002. I think we took it over in, maybe 2012. So by that time, the studio had like 10 years.
Yeah.
Right. And it was in decline at the time, for sure. But at the same time, it still had that history. And then I just thought, okay, well, this is not a slam dunk decision. Like the numbers for this studio are not, they're not the signs of a healthy, thriving studio at this moment.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think, you know, there's things that I could do and change and like turn it around. And so that's what I did. In a lot of ways, that was easier, right? Like the studio was established. There was a somewhat hardcore contingent of people. And I also had that like ace card where I had like a prior relationship with the place.
Yeah. Right? Which is super cool.
It's super cool. But, you know, but like having said all that stuff too, like rewinding back to this whole idea of like where to open a studio and stuff. Like I've also had friends, you know, open studios in Calgary, and this was earlier in the career, but they were smart and they're like, I'm not going to go downtown. Like this is a big city. Like I am going to like, I'm going to go to like the Southwest. Right? I'm going to open in Canyon Meadows, like Ian Buchanan did, or like, I'm going to like open, you know, like there's even studios in like Mackenzie Town. And so if there's people on this phone call that aren't from Calgary, Mackenzie Town is a bit of like a satellite community, I feel in some way.
Right? It's like very sprawling, very, very out there.
Yeah. The people are like, you know what? There's people over there. I'm going to open my smaller studio, and like, maybe it's not going to seem super cool to all the hipsters, and I'm out in suburbia.
Yeah.
But those communities are underserved, and they're totally making it happen, and they're still around, right? And so there's a level of intelligence there.
Yeah, like knowing your city and knowing your market, I think, is really key for something like that. Because with Calgary, it's
sure.
You know, not everybody works downtown. There's a mm-hmm. huge, you know, stay at home mom population. And there's sure. also a lot of people who don't want to go into the city early, get really sweaty, mm-hmm. change and shower at a studio, go straight to work, or yeah. go to work, change at the studio, go there totally. And then go home. Like they want to have mm-hmm. that home sort of in between.
For sure.
So
for
I think
sure.
that's a really good point.
Yeah, like unless you're like one of the very first, like if someone wants to run a studio now, right, and like actually open up a studio, like I think like your greatest chance of success is to go to a community where yoga really hasn't been super established yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think for some folks that's kind of like a challenging thing to hear. It's like, well, I really like living here, or I rather like, you know. But honestly, like if you're living in Vancouver and you want to open a yoga studio in Vancouver, it's going to be a grind, right? Or, you know,
like there's a yoga studio basically on every corner in Vancouver.
How do you
compete with that? Like, what are you going to do that's going to be better than
for sure.
One yoga or Y yoga? Or
right. Well, yeah. And then, so like mature markets, right? And that's the other interesting thing that's going on in like some of like the cities and stuff is that, you know, like a lot of the yoga stuff is now becoming like in the more corporate model
mm-hmm.
where it's like, you know, now you're working off economies of scale, right? Where, and it's kind of like, in some ways, depending on who's running the helm, sometimes, you know, the bigger institutional thing, like I can see why some people like it, you know, well, if I get a membership here, there's like these 7-letter studios that I can teach at,
mm-hmm.
or if I, you know, or sorry, that I can practice at, you know, like, so whatever part of the city, I'm like a small business guy. So mm-hmm. I love mom and pop.
Yeah.
And I've always in my yoga career, like supported studios that were mom and pop because it was a different sort of vibe. But honestly, in some of these bigger cities, I think the next level of survival now is so crazy that it is getting to the corporate Odin. Like I look at Vancouver right now and it's like Clash of the Titans, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like Y Yoga versus Semper Viva, right? Like two big dogs.
Yeah.
And I think like a lot of like the other players on the side, they're either like really trying to like differentiate themselves, or they're thinking like expand or die, or like, you know, join forces with other studios and like put ourselves under like the same name to survive,
yeah,
sort of thing. And that's like, you know, those are like very established in some ways, like yoga models there, right? And
yeah, it's crazy. It's like the battle of the yoga studios.
Well, honestly, because you're in Atlanta right now.
Yeah.
I don't know what the setup is like there, but, you know, a mature market, probably 6 million people live there. Like, you're telling me there's, like, you Google, like, Atlanta Yoga Studio, there's probably hundreds.
Oh, they just keep coming up. Like, you search in one part of Google, and then you go to another place, and, like, there's kind of these big-name studios that mm-hmm. obviously have, you know, more like better SEO, maybe more
sure.
money to put ads out on the internet yeah. type thing. But then it's like you go in smaller and there's just more little red dots pop up.
Oh yeah, for sure. Right?
It's mental. I have no idea how all these businesses stay in business.
Well, a lot of them don't, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like I feel like from like Calgary, Vancouver, there is a consolidation right now where like a lot of the smaller players are getting pushed out.
Yeah.
By and large, I think the people that came in early, just by virtue of being around longer and having just a little more establishment, those guys do have a hand in staying around longer. And in say like these bigger markets as well too, like some of these like smaller studios, they if they have an opportunity to be like sold or bought into say like a Y Yoga model or a bigger corporate model, and if it works for the, you know, like, you know, people do that as well too. It's an interesting situation.
Yeah, but like, definitely.
Yeah, but like going back like four topics to like when we're talking about, hey, like buying an established studio.
Yeah.
That too is a really interesting thing because buying a yoga studio, you kind of gotta ask yourself. And like, I know we're talking real business here.
Yeah.
But I hope some people on your podcast appreciate this, is that you kind of ask yourself, like, what are you buying?
Yeah. Right?
You're buying the space. Hopefully you're buying like the location and there's still a good lease on it. And then you're buying this really amorphous thing called goodwill, right?
Yeah.
Which is an interesting thing where it's like, okay, like people like Studio X and you're going to buy Studio X. And even though the original owner has sold it to you, there's kind of this sort of fingers crossed thing that you're going to step in as a new owner and this goodwill is going to transfer over to you.
Yeah.
And that kind of ties back to what I was saying, like, you gotta be ready to like integrate into that community, be very like humble, compassionate, understanding, and teach your socks off to like tie that goodwill together.
Yeah.
Like when I look back, say at, like the whole legal battle I had with my prior business partner at the Bodhi Tree, I remember like my lawyer saying to me at the darkest time when things are just going super crazy south, right? When like, on the other side was just like hammering us with like, you know, all sorts of perfectly timed legal stuff. He's like, you know what, Jeff? You know what? This is a goodwill business.
Yeah.
This business runs on goodwill. And you know what? The goodwill, from what I've seen, sits on top of two legs. And those two legs belong to you.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be fine. Right. And
nice to hear from a lawyer.
He was a kick-ass lawyer.
Yeah. I remember in legal trouble. I want your lawyer.
You talk to me. Cause like what happens, that's another thing I learned. Like I had to fire my first lawyer, right? Like I'm freaking out. I just like, I don't want conflict in my life. I'm a yoga person. I'm going to pay this lawyer $400 an hour because at $400 an hour, they must be awesome. I can just live my life.
I hope so. $400 an hour? You better be good.
It doesn't work like that, man. It does not work like that. Like you have to advocate for yourself. And the second lawyer that I got, turns out, like, I knew his younger brother. And mm-hmm. I helped his younger brother start his business years ago. And so all of a sudden we had, like, this sort of, like, pseudo connection. It's like, you helped my younger brother, like, when he opened, like, his climbing gym. You were there.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm freaking going to bat for you. And I was like, sweet.
Nice.
And then we fought that. But so that's the other thing. Like, when someone, it's weird because, like, if someone's going to sell a yoga studio and someone's going to buy a yoga studio, it's kind of tough to value that thing. And I think there are numerous situations out there where people buy a yoga studio and they don't know what they're paying for.
Yeah.
Right. Either they're either getting it for like a steal mm-hmm. or they're totally like paying way too much for something. Right. It's wacky. But I do feel if you can pull off like taking over a yoga studio and you have those X factors that you're going to come in and tie the community together and just work your buns off. That's a better way than just taking a space and building it out.
Yeah.
Like it blows me away. Like what people are putting into like to start yoga studios, like, especially like in the cities, like I'm going to buy this space. And then they put like $200,000 into the reno.
Totally. You know, like they're fancy. Like, there's a lot of really fancy yoga studios out there.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm just like, what? It's like, yeah, like, you know, you got like, you know, if the crazy thing is like, you're setting, you know, you're digging yourself out of a big hole. And I think part of it is that whole thing is like, I'm going to run this yoga studio. It's going to be so chic. It's going to be like, you know, it's going to look a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times people like feel that that's what people want.
Yeah.
And depending on the community where you're at, maybe it is what people want. And if that's the case, like, man, like, I sure hope you got deep pockets if you have to play that game.
Yeah.
The Yoga Lounge, I know not everyone on your podcast has gone. The Yoga Lounge, you know, we are a lovely space, but we are not crazy. You know, we do not have marble countertops and we do not have, you know, like fancy sinks with like $700 faucets. We do not have, you know, like state of the art, you know, crazy flooring and, you know, like a $5,000 sound system.
Yeah.
We don't have any of that. Like we have like a really nice view out of our windows.
Beautiful view.
and we have teachers that rock the socks, right? And so we're kind of old school that way. Like, we kind of work off like the content versus the razzle dazzle and the window dressing.
Yeah. It kind of makes me sad that yoga is going towards this, like, oh, the studio is really beautiful and chic, so like, I'm going to go there, as opposed to the quality of teaching.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting thing, because I think there are places where they nail both ends. Mm-hmm. Where like the place looks killer and like the staff are awesome. And then when if people are able to do that, like, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Like for us, I feel our studio looks great for what it's supposed to be, and it reflects the values of our community.
Totally.
Mountain town. Like, man, like, I was in my friend's studio in Calgary in Inglewood, Junction 9.
Yeah, Junction 9's a beautiful studio.
Gorgeous place. Like, oh my gosh. Like, if people are down in Calgary, check them out. Like, stunning design, looks awesome. But the thing is, they own the building.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah, you know, like, yeah, those guys, they put a lot of money into making that space stunningly beautiful. But at the end of the day, they still own the building. Mm-hmm. Right? It blows me away when people are like renting and you just like put all this money into a space. And at the end of the day, you know, you can get pushed out of it.
Yeah.
Or you have no say on it. You know, like, it's nuts, right? So, yeah.
Is there like any formative of advice you'd give to like any listeners who are like, okay, I really do want to own a studio, and like can they hire like a business coach, or, you know, does a lawyer do that? I'm not too sure about the details of that. I don't know if you know that either. That's totally fine if you don't.
Sure. Okay, well, if I had advice for someone that's looking for like getting into like a yoga studio scene, the first couple of things I would do is really do some market research. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, and you gotta be brutally honest there, right? You gotta like look at where you're thinking of opening, look who's already there, and be brutally realistic.
Yeah. Right? I think that's like a huge key, like not lying to yourself and being like, oh, well, I'll be different.
Yeah.
Like mine'll be different. Like, all these have failed, but mine'll be different.
Yeah. And maybe that's the case, but I'm a huge fan of set yourself up for success as well as set yourself up for failure. Like case in point, like in the Bow Valley here where I live, Canmore, it's only 13,000 people. Honestly, like, this is not like a market that I think makes sense for, like, especially like for multiple yoga studios. Like there's us and there's a hot yoga studio. They do something different than us. Like, we love Hillary Wood, who runs like, you know, Hot Yoga Canmore, and we kind of like, you know, it works.
Yeah.
But we're only 13,000 people, right? And then you look at like, you know, like, so part one, really look at your market, really look what's going on, and just ask yourself, is this going to work? Mm-hmm. Right. And if someone really, really wants to like open a yoga studio, then, you know, you may have to go somewhere where, you know, it's not saturated. Ideally, you're like first person in or second person in. Right.
Yeah.
And then that's huge. Like, some friends of mine, they opened a studio in Red Deer, you know, some people are like, Red Deer? And like, you know what? Red Deer. And they got in there and they are rocking it.
Oh, I bet.
They were one of the first places in Red Deer. Red Deer, like, you know, small community, not that small. Like city of, it's third biggest city in Alberta. So, you know, several hundred thousand, and they were just yearning for something like yoga. And so they came and said, we are going to be your yoga people.
Yeah. That's amazing. And,
right. And so, you know, they took like a shift. They said, okay, we're going to live in Red Deer and we're going to make it happen. The second thing I would say, once you have that part figured out, is, you have to have a kick-ass lawyer, mm-hmm. for sure. And the thing is, with like, on the legal side of things, there's different kinds of lawyers, mm-hmm. right? And so if you're going to like go into like a business partnership with someone, you can't just get your Uncle Bob, who's your lawyer, to like check out, to read over the contract.
Yeah.
Like, if it's like a legal contract, you get a contract lawyer to read it, right? If it's like a leasing contract, right? You know, especially if you're dealing with someone like those freaking like cutthroat companies that are property management companies that are in the bigger cities, like those guys will slit your throats, right? And so you need to have like a kick-ass contract lawyer to read that, right?
Yeah.
So you're not signing into something that you're set up to fail, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy. I remember when I was at the Bodhi Tree, we had a lease signed, and basically, you think when you own a lease, you're going to pay the same amount of money because that's what a lease is, right?
Yeah, totally.
And then all of a sudden, like halfway through the lease, the rent goes up. How the heck does the rent go up? Well, we realized when we measured the building, we didn't measure it right. And now, like, you know, we were measuring to the inside of the walls, not to the outside of the walls.
Oh my gosh.
And then, like, the common areas, we forgot to factor them in. And yeah, even the elevator shaft, you know, that's a common area. And so once we figured out, there's actually, you know, like, all the tenants are now responsible for, like, you know, several thousand more square feet. So this is your portion. So, you know, fork out extra money every month.
That's
and
mental.
You're like, this is like a smoke and mirrors game, right?
It's like this reminder that everyone doesn't believe in karma.
Well, you know, but that's what these big property management companies do, right?
They hire people to find those loopholes and do those types of things.
For sure, right? You know, so on the legal side is you get your space. If you are building out your space, the best scenarios is there is someone in your personal world that is really good with tools and can help build out a space. I'm flat out serious here.
No, like, I think it's really important to like reach out to people in your network and find people who can do, you know, things like, for ideally, you the more affordably.
Yeah, ideally, like your husband or your wife is like, you know, a general contractor and like
or your dad.
Like case in point, like the yoga lounge, Candace and Alistair Cook, who now run Yoga Santosha in Calgary, they started this studio in 2002 and Alistair Cook is a gifted carpenter, right?
Yeah.
Like Candace is like, I'm going to teach the yoga and Alistair's like, I'm going to build the studio. And
that's a brilliant partnership.
Yeah. Like, cause like, if you have someone building, you like save a ton of money, right?
And, yeah, totally.
And the same thing with like, you know, like at Junction 9, like that super beautiful studio that we mentioned before, you know, they built it themselves, you know, like Owen Beto, I'm pretty damn sure he did a ton of the work, right? And they had family connections to do all that stuff as well. Yeah. Like if you're just going to come in and you don't know anyone who's going to do construction, like someone that's really got your back and you're just going to like general contract it out to someone, that sucker is going to go over budget like crazy. Like all build outs go over budget. And so get ready to like be so far behind the eight ball.
Yeah. And something that's interesting with that, like my dad built houses like for his entire career. So like my entire life and, contractors are really unreliable. I don't know how many times there was like him so angry being like, oh, like the effing painter didn't show up. Like,
yeah, right.
Or it's like the effing electrician didn't show up. Like we're putting drywall on tomorrow. Like the drywallers are coming and the electricity has not been wired.
Oh yeah, totally. Right. Or it's like, you know, someone comes in to like, you know, do job X and you think, well, I'm paying them good money. It should look good.
Yeah.
And you come in, it looks like crap. Right? If you have someone or you're doing it yourself or you have someone in your family or someone you know, you're deeply connected to that's doing it, you know, they're not going to try and pull a fast one on you.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's just the build out. Okay. Other things that I think are critical is to have, you got to have a really good web person. Cause basically the way it boils down to with web stuff I've learned, you're either going to do it yourself. Or you're going to pay someone else to do it.
Yeah.
And I did my first website, like jeffmon.com, myself. And that was okay. But there's a reason why the new jeffmon.com website is done by a pro. Your studio, especially in this day and age, I think needs to have like a really good website. And you got to budget for that and get someone to do it. Someone's got to come in and do that for you. Unless, you know, just like the contractor side, you have someone in your family or your deep circle of close friends that can do it because your website is huge. And then like all that other stuff, like, you know, like SEO and like, you know, search engine optimization, like all that stuff, especially if you're in like a big community, like if you don't have like a website that sings and connects, especially in like a big market, like you're dead. Right.
Cause it's kind of interesting. I mean, the way the like things are in 2015 going into 2016, like it's an internet world. Like somebody's not going to, in most cases, somebody's not going to just show up at your studio to check it out. They're going to Google you beforehand and look at your website and make a judgment right away. They're making a decision whether or not they show up based on what they see on the internet.
Yeah. Which is right. Like we're working on redoing the Yoga Lounge website. Right. Because, you know, since 2012, like the climate has changed and yoga's and the websites have gotten better. And, you know, we, and like our site worked great for a while and I feel it's time for a refresh. Mm-hmm. Other people to have in your circle, you need to have a graphic designer. Mm-hmm. Unless you're like some Photoshop nerd and you want to like make posters all the time. And like, I have done that before and I had some luck with it, but honestly, no. Like you have to have a graphic designer. Next person you have to have on your team, you have to have a kick-ass accountant. Accountant/ bookkeeper. Because when it comes tax time and business practices and yogis are horrible by and large with money, you gotta have, well, I think the general populace is quite bad with money, but I think there's some yoga people out there that have hang-ups that they think money is dirty or something.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
really like let it slide.
I'm laughing because like I totally agree with you.
Yeah. But, like you gotta have someone to help with that. Mm-hmm. You know, you can do your taxes by yourself, but like honestly, you have like an accountant, someone like that can help you. Super great. Other things that also help if you have in your, and I'm just talking from my personal team of folks that support me. I have two friends that are also financial planners, and so they help me with like the big picture of my life finances, mm-hmm. because you know the studio is not an inexpensive thing to run, and if someone knows what my personal dreams are for running the studio in tandem with my financial picture, they can help guide me in those decisions as well. That is huge,
and that also keeps you sort of like having an understanding as to how the studio is doing as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, like in the beginning I was scared of reporting.
Yeah,
of you know, and just kind of. And, you know, like, again, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to, like, this is one of the biggest mistakes I made, like, last year. Mm-hmm. Was like, I'm just going to teach my heart out, teach well, and everything's going to sort itself out. Doesn't work that way. It's not that simple.
Okay.
That baseline, that is critical.
Yeah.
That is non-negotiable. That has to happen. You got to do a great job, and you have to really capture the hearts of your students. But, it is not enough, much to my chagrin. It is not enough. You have to keep your finger on your pulse with your studio,
yeah,
and really see what's going on. It is not enough to do that, which I think for some folks is kind of heartbreaking to know. And I think for myself, that was a tough thing to learn.
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing for people to hear.
Yeah, big time. It is critical, but at the same time, it's not the only thing that will assure you of your success.
Yeah.
Other people that you need to have in your team, okay, is that you should ideally have a core group of teachers that are talented, that you respect, and that you trust, okay? And depending on the size of your studio, like that really depends on, you know, like how big it's going to be. Like if you're going to start in a smaller community, very likely you'll be teaching the bulk of the classes with like one or two other people, and then onwards you go.
Mm-hmm. Did you find it was easier since you came into a studio that already had teachers, or do you think it would have been easier to find your own teachers?
For us, basically what happened was we came in and I remember someone was like, hey, Jeff, so are you guys going to like teach like the bulk of the classes? Cause you know, that's like the most cost effective and you're good at teaching. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? No, I'm actually going to like fit myself in around the other teachers' schedules. So I didn't just come in and say, like, push everyone out of their time slots. I kind of, like, waited in and around.
Yeah,
and,
that's good.
And I kept the team. And I think and the reason why I kept the team was the team had been teaching here before I had, and they had the trust of the students.
Yeah.
They've been doing a fine job. They just needed more support. And you know, I wanted to integrate. Like, I didn't want to come in and, like, push that off to the side. And so for me, that was really meaningful to like not like run roughshod over like our existing teachers. Because our existing teachers, your teachers are a massive resource.
Right? Yeah, totally.
And sometimes you got to like redeploy your teachers. Like, you know, okay, maybe you work better at this time slot. But at the same time, like it has to be done thoughtfully. Right? Like, I could have been like, I want to teach Monday 5:30. I want to teach this time. I want to teach all the prime time slots. You guys did all the dregs. It would have collapsed.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Like you need to find that balance between keeping yourself happy and keeping your teachers happy as well.
Yeah, big time. And maybe in the beginning, you might have to like keep your teachers a little more happy than yourself happy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting.
Probably most likely somewhere else that you can talk to. And not have to reinvent the wheel, mm-hmm. right? And so whether it's like someone else that owns a successful yoga studio or a business that's similar to a yoga studio, or like a teacher that you really respect that has had experience running a studio, that is invaluable. And if you can't get that, there is consultancy services out there. I think there's a guy named Alan Segui that is on the web. I think he's spelled A-L-O-N, and he like mentors yoga studio businesses.
Oh, cool.
Like someone like that, I think could be helpful for someone if you're in a community where, you know, you don't know exactly what's going on.
Yeah. So definitely finding some sort of mentor or even like a coach or somebody who can kind of like keep you accountable and who you can talk to about those things.
Yeah. Or like someone, you know, that can kind of like, you know, someone that when things are going wrong, you can talk to them and they can help you and like kind of maybe give you some analysis or give you a pep talk or like, you know, someone you can bounce an idea off of and they can tell you if it works or not. Like not just someone's going to blow smoke up your ass, you know, but like someone that's going to say, you know what? I did this. It worked for me. It might work for you because of this, but it might not work for this, or, you know, definitely don't do that. We did that before. You know, but someone that's been in the game longer, right? Like for myself, I just took all the mistakes I made from the first studio I ran and like started putting into this one.
Yeah.
And now from like, from the mentorship side of things right now, a lot of that I've actually just started like talking with other people that run businesses mm-hmm. per se. Not necessarily yoga businesses, or just working on studying more about this crazy world of business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it's definitely a unique business, but it is in the bigger scale, like it is a business, like supply demand. Mm-hmm. I remembered my question from before.
Sure.
I was going to ask you about sort of like managing teachers and stuff. Have you had issues around like finding subs and sort of that sort of thing, or has that been very like smooth for you?
Like finding subs for myself, or like if like the studio needs a sub or something, or
like in terms of, do you find that your group of teachers is pretty reliable for, you know, they teach their times every week, or is there a lot of people who are like, ah, I need a sub this week and none of your other teachers can teach?
By and large, we're pretty good. We're pretty good, you know, like I think looking back on 2015, there's only two times where like someone forgot to teach their class. what the fuck were they thinking? You know, having said that, you know, like, so like two times.
Sometimes you wake up and you think it's Tuesday and it's Wednesday.
Yeah, for sure. Or you think, you know, and to their credit, those folks were mortified when they realized what they'd done.
Oh, totally. How could you not be?
Yeah, they wouldn't be teaching for us anymore. But by and large, like I feel that we have enough depth across our teaching schedule. Like we mm-hmm. have enough teachers that we can generally catch it, right? If you're in a situation where you don't have a lot of depth in your teaching community, or like you're in a yoga community that doesn't have as many people, like say you're cracking out brand new, you know, mm-hmm. at a place, right? And you're like the first yoga studio there. Chances are, if someone needs like subbing, you're going to sub that class.
Yeah.
Right. Because you're the owner. If you own a business, if you like,
yeah, at the end of the day, it falls back on you, right?
Everything falls back on you. And if someone doesn't like that, if they don't like if someone doesn't want to be last line of defense, if someone doesn't want to have to like on occasion have to make a big sacrifice, if someone's not willing to do that, I would strongly recommend them not getting into like owning a yoga business, because yeah. there will just be too many of those situations, at least in the beginning, where it's going to happen. Sadly enough, but
yeah.
that's the reality of it. But the other thing too is like when we hire teachers, we don't hire flakes, you know, like we hire folks that like really really love to teach.
Yeah,
and then they're not just teaching because they think it's cool. Right? They're teaching because like yoga has made a big difference in their life and they really want to share it. And because there's such a desire to like do that and to share and be in relationship with students, like there's a respect for teaching, right? And so if people need the sub, they sort it out, right? And if, you know, and they'll just like flippantly like, oh, it's like sunny out today, I want to go.
I'm just not going to teach my class.
Yeah, you know, like it's like, so I think that's a big part of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an integrity piece for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Do you feel like you can tell like right away when you meet somebody? Like, have you worked with enough yoga teachers now that you're like, yep, you're authentic, you're awesome. Okay, you're not quite there yet. Like,
in the beginning, I thought I knew that, and I didn't actually. And now, like over time, like I'm slowly getting better at it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, people surprise you, and sometimes people let you down.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's just a human thing. It's part of our human experience.
Exactly right. But you know, like, and that's oftentimes why, like, and if you want to get into the topic, like, how do you start to teach at a yoga studio? Right, like, which is another, like, God, that could be a podcast. Right. A lot of times, you know, like when I look at teachers and stuff, like we have, you know, on occasion pulled teachers from within.
Yeah. Right?
Like if someone's been like a student with us for like a while, and I've seen how they practice, and I know, and I've known them over years, and I can kind of like, you know, I know them in a different way. Right.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, like, you know, this person ain't gonna like flake. This person ain't gonna let me down. Like, if they, you know, they've practiced in front of me for like 5 years, or, you know, and I see how committed they are, and I see how they're teaching. Like, you see that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you feel like for you, if somebody is actually wanting to teach at your studio, it's mm-hmm. showing their face, introducing themselves, as opposed to, you know, shooting off an email that seems sort of generic or leaving a message on your voicemail?
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. Like, you know, if you're just gonna, like, if someone's looking to get a teaching gig somewhere and you're just gonna, like, write an email or drop off a resume, if you're in a market that's a little more mature mm-hmm. and yoga's been around for a while, don't expect a response. Or don't expect a lot, or don't expect a success rate of anything really meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah, like a lot of times I think established studios like to promote from within and work with people that understand the culture. Or, you know, if it's someone that's been coming to the studio a lot, right? Like if someone wants to teach at a place and, you know, someone wants to teach at like, you know, Studio X and they're there all the time and they're making the commitment that, hey, look, you know, I want to teach here, but I can't teach here right now. But, you know, I'm going to practice here. I'm going to figure out, you know, what your community is like. I'm going to spend time with you as the studio owner. I'm going to come to class. I'm going to, like, you know, and I'm not going to be pushy about it because, you know, I also want to be at this yoga community because I like it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like a slower, it's kind of like slower, but it's relationship building.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I feel like it's really important to have your like brand as a yoga teacher on brand with the brand of the yoga studio. And I mean, I'm a really new teacher, so I'm just kind of taking what I know from business school and kind of applying that to yoga teaching. But
like what does that mean exactly when you say that?
Like, so in my mind, I'm thinking if I was like, okay, I really love to teach yin, like I'm a yin teacher, and sure. I'm shooting off emails to all these studios, and or even if I'm stopping by, like if I go to a Bikram studio, you know, like what I teach isn't really what they teach at that studio.
And totally hear you.
Part of like not just shooting out those generic emails is like going to the studio and actually seeing if you could see yourself teaching there as much as that studio owner can see you in that
big
studio
time.
Teaching their students.
Oh, big time. Like I think a good studio owner, and I think I'm not bad at it. Like a good studio owner in a lot of ways is really like you're thinking about your students, right? Like you're thinking like, you know, I want them to be happy. Like mm-hmm. I want them to be learning. Like I want the people in front of them to carry them well. Right. And so if I just get an email from someone, hey, I'd like to teach there. I'm like, I don't know you. Like, I'm not gonna let you babysit my kids.
That's a really great analogy though. Like, I mean, your students, when you teach them all the time in your community at your studio, like, you know, they're your family.
I love them, right? You know, like,
yeah.
Like, right? And so, yeah, it's like, I gotta know you better, you know, or maybe someone that I deeply respect, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Has nothing but great things to say about you. And, you know, that's how we've had some subs too, where like some of like the senior teachers at the lounge, you know, they're like, hey, Jeff, you know, like blah, blah, blah. is really committed to their practice. I know you don't get a chance to see them as much, but I've been working with them a lot. And I think they're doing a great job, and maybe I've been mentoring them or I know them. I think they'd be good. I'm like, okay, cool, all right.
That's awesome.
I think that's also helpful too. But if you're just kind of coming in out of left field and, if you're like just the freaking best teacher ever.
Sean Korn, you can send an email.
If Sean Korn sent me an email, I was like, hey, I'm in Canmore, I'm going skiing for a while. You might have been like, would it be okay if I came in and taught a class? Yeah, I guess Sean Korn, you can come.
You might have just stopped by and show your face first, see if you fit in with our community. Oh my god!
I don't know, Sean. Maybe you could Karma Queen for a couple months.
Oh my god! Could you imagine?
Yeah, that'd be hilarious. But
that would be pretty funny.
Yeah, that's sort of next level, right? Where you got to be pretty special. Say if I'm in Vancouver, I feel like I do have that sort of relationship with a couple of studios where I'm like, hey, I'm in town. Mm-hmm. If you guys need some help, let me know, right? And they're like, sweet, man. It's like Christmas time. You want to come and teach a little bit because it's kind of crazy for a regular staff? I'm like, sure. But I'm not pushy about it. And there's been a prior relationship built because, I know their studio owner or they've just been doing it long enough. So,
Yeah, no, that's super cool. Yeah. I think it's important for new teachers to kind of understand that because, it's this world that you kind of step into and you're like, you go from a practitioner to a teacher. I don't really know what to do. And if you've never owned a studio, which you probably haven't, if you just started teaching yoga, unless you're crazy, you don't really understand sort of what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. And that's why, when I look at someone sending their teaching resume, they've taught some crazy gigs, they've taught, community, I don't necessarily look, if you've taught at Studio X, Y, and Z, that's nice. But if you've taught some crazy thing here, or you did this group, or you work with something that's a little offbeat, to me, I think there's value in that.
Yeah.
And just going back, just rewinding one or two ideas there. Amanda, when you talk about a brand and stuff, I think part of that is also, and I think newer teachers need to understand this. The other thing is expertise.
Yeah. Right?
If someone is a relatively new teacher and say they want to teach at the yoga lounge, there are students here that have been practicing 12, 13 years, right? Mm-hmm. And some of them have taken training. They just don't want to teach, right? And there are people, I'm not going to send in someone that everyone else is going to be like, I know way more than this person. Why the hell are they at the front of the room? Right? That's a really interesting thing, right? It's a high pre- so oftentimes at the yoga lounge, it's someone has to be teaching for a while. Someone can't just have, 200 hours necessarily for some of our classes because you'll just get eaten alive.
As somebody who stepped out of a 200 level training and came back to the Canmore community, I was like, there's no way I can teach in this community.
Yet. Right?
Right. Yeah. It's not I can never teach here. Right now, my practice isn't even at the level of some of those people. And yes, I've got the skills to lead people, but I've got the skills to lead people who have been practicing way less than these people.
Right, for sure, right? And so sometimes people get all huffy, I don't know why they just won't let me teach there. And I'm you know what? If you want to end your yoga teacher career prematurely and have a super traumatic experience and come teach a class and then have five people correct you on 10 of your glaring mistakes at the end or just not show up and give you a second chance.
Yeah.
But I would put you in. But I don't think that's going to be helpful for anyone involved.
Yeah, no, I totally get that.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting concept because it's definitely something that I thought about. I was so intimidated coming back from Bali. I was like, I'd really love to teach since I'm a teacher now, but I can't teach at the yoga lounge. I can't teach at Rocky Mountain Yoga. like Jeff Ma and Aaron Evans teach there. Like, I am not on par with these people.
Well, you know, you don't have to be like on par, but you do kind of like got to be in the ballpark, right?
And
set yourself up for success, right? So what you're doing right now, like you're getting teaching experience at other places and so you cut your teeth and you figure out what it is and then you start coming in. Like God, if someone walked into like, say, like an established studio and then they're mixing up their lefts and rights and like the timing was wrong, like just rudimentary stuff like that where one side's held longer or you know, you'd be dead.
Yeah,
like the vibe you would just feel in the room would just be like so horrible, you know, like you just feel like everyone's like tensing up because you're making, I just don't want someone to go through that. That's just not right.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because I feel like a lot of times people forget that there's other options outside of studios. Like there's lots of gyms that offer yoga classes and there's lots of community classes in any town or city. And I feel like those are really good options if you're a new teacher.
Oh, completely. Absolutely. Like just using our analogy, say of mature markets, mm-hmm. right? It's like you look at like big city or you look at like a very established yoga studio, that's like the big leagues, right? Mm-hmm. And if you just come out of like a training, right? It's like pro sports. Like if like, say you've been playing a certain level of hockey, you don't think you're going to play NHL right away. Right?
Yeah.
You're going to play like AA. Triple A, you're going to grind it out, you know, and then you're going to play like maybe WHL for a while. And then you'll play like, you know, like maybe like a minor pro team. And mm-hmm. then by then you've gotten hopefully the skills that you can, you know, you can go to the big leagues, right? And up you go. And if you have a mature yoga market, you know, like the very, very established yoga studios that a lot of people want to teach at, those guys want the big leagues, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's full pro then. And so don't take that personally, right? Build the skills up and go from there.
Kind of reminds me of like even coming out of business school, and I don't know if it was the same with engineering, but there's mm-hmm. a lot of people who step out and they've got this degree and they're like, well, why am I like sorting files and doing administrative work? Like I have a BCom.
Sure.
And it's like, right. Okay, like sure, you've got a BCom, but there's people here who've worked for 25 years, like you need to get some experience. And it's not to say that you can't move up quickly, but you need to work hard and you need to prove yourself.
Exactly. You got, you know, like, you know, whether it's like paying your dues and just learning all those invaluable skills. Like I, you know, like when I got into the yoga scene, it was a different world. Like mm-hmm. when I said I was in the right place at the right time, a lot of the teachers out there right now that are doing their thing, they too were in the right place at the right time. And I'm not saying like that right place, right time is over. There are different right places and different right times and people have to like understand that, mm-hmm. right? It's just like, I'm sure 120 years ago, you and me could have gone to like some sort of acting school and then moved to California and we could have been movie stars. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, we would have been like fabulous movie stars.
Exactly. Right. Like we would have been the first 50 people into Hollywood. We can sing a little bit. We can dance a little bit. Like, get that person in a movie. Right. But now you look at like, here we are. We move forward.
Yeah.
And everybody that goes into acting school that has aspirations of, you know, becoming the next, like, I don't know, becoming the next, like, BJ Novak or like Brad Pitt or like
Meryl George Street. Clooney.
George Clooney. Like it's not that easy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, it's a fascinating world, right?
Yeah, it's cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. I think the world's amazing and I love the way that it evolves and changes. I think it's super cool.
Big time.
So kind of like a big broad question for you, and I'm mm-hmm. only going to ask you a few more because I've kept you on the phone for so long. And
yeah,
it's cool. Also
that's
like,
been fun.
Yeah, no, it's been amazing. Is owning a yoga studio what you expected? Like going back 10 years when you had this image in your mind of what it would be like to teach at one place and kind of like be your own boss and own your own business. Now that you're there and you've been in that for, a couple years now and had two studio experiences. Like, is it what you expected?
Well, is it what I expected? I'd probably say no. No, I wouldn't say it is what I expected. It's funny, right? Because there's things I expected. Like, yeah. I expected it to be hard work.
Yeah.
I didn't expect how hard it would be. like next level, right? Like, I expected to have, like, challenging decisions.
Kind of like parenting?
Sure, man. Yeah, like, and for, like, you know, callers on or people on this podcast, you know, I have two kids and I'm absolutely flailing as a parent right now. But I didn't expect how hard it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that to, like, be negative. I'm just being perfectly candid. And, you know, I think you ask anyone that runs their own business,
mm-hmm.
Especially when you come from, like, a place where you work for someone else, all of a sudden when you're in charge, it's, like, a totally different thing, right? Like yeah. Case in point right now, like, you and I, we're talking. It is Friday night,
mm-hmm.
And it's 11:30 at night. Guess where I'm at? I'm at the yoga studio. And when you and I are done talking, it's probably going to be like midnight, and I'm going to start to do, like, my daily close for the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I have a manager that helps me with certain nights, but at the same time, you know.
Who's super awesome.
Who is super awesome. And then I also have, like, another manager based in Atlanta. I don't know how that works. Super awesome. You know, and then I have, like, you know. And so, case in point, here I am, you know. I'm probably going to get out of here at, like, 1 in the morning.
Yeah.
And you know, there's times where, like, I'll run into students. Hey, I was, like, walking my dog. You know, I was, like, you know, the dog had to do, like, a late night walk, and it was, like, super cold and snowy, and it was, like, you know, it was, like, midnight, and the lights were on at the yoga lounge. What's that all about? Were you there? I was like, yeah, I was totally there. Right.
Yeah.
And so I never expected how much work it would be.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the other things that I didn't expect, because there are pleasant surprises too, right?
Yeah.
I didn't expect the level of joy there can be in guiding and leading a community and having the privilege and immense responsibility of shaping a vision.
Yeah.
I love that. Right? Like I love, you know, I love being able to, like, say, hey, this is the yoga lounge. Like, this is, like, a labor of love.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we stand for. And seeing that effect ripple down. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that, you know, I also didn't expect just, there's social dynamics and relationship things that happen, running a studio. I didn't expect those, but, like, that's a little more complicated than I would have thought.
Yeah.
I'm being perfectly candid here.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that.
Yeah, when you're just a yoga teacher, you can have a different level of relationship with students and with people. But as, say, the owner, I just find myself, if I'm wearing, like, my owner hat, I have to, like, I step back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
My circle of friends as a yoga student is smaller. And then that's actually, I find, probably simpler. Like, I don't really get a chance to, like, say, like, hang out all the time with all the teachers, right? Cause I don't want to, like, play favorites, or it could be construed as playing favorites. There are a couple teachers that are at the studio that I do hang out with, but we also, like, say, do teacher training together. And mm-hmm. So I see ourselves more as colleagues. And so there's a different relationship factor to that.
Yeah.
But you know, and so, like, in some ways, like, it's this weird paradox where, like, I lead the community, but I'm also have to be somewhat removed from the community, as well.
Yeah.
Right. And that's just for, like, the ease of relationships for everyone. And that's kind of fascinating. Other things about studio ownership I never expected, was that, I'm kind of, like, sort of an extrovert, sort of an introvert, and really, when I'm in front of people so much and the things are going well, I do need that time away.
Yeah. It takes up a lot of your energy to be on all the time.
Yeah. And like, I really like anonymity. Like, I love Canmore, mm-hmm. small town, but there's times where it's like, I'm just not going to like go to like, say, you know, a super popular cafe or go to restaurant X or go like,
or the grocery store.
Yeah.
I've said so many times to Ryan, I'm like, I don't even know how Jeff and Hillary get their grocery shopping done.
Oh, well, I shop at oddball hours. Like I'll shop like Thursday night, say
10:50.
Yeah, 10 to 11. You know, like, you know, no one else is there. Because if I see someone, you know, I do want to talk to them usually. And but if you know,
it's a relationship thing, right? You're like, especially if it's somebody who's practicing at the studio, you don't want to be like, oh, sorry, like I'm grocery shopping. I'm not your yoga teacher right now. I'm not your like community person. No. You're always that person to that person.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, I just give like space from there. So you know, so there's times where you know a little bit of anonymity can seem really luxurious.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I think that's a bunch. I think that's a bunch of things.
But yeah.
It can be like really hard work and. But at the same time, if this is something that someone really wants to do, it can be really rewarding.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So there's a question that I'm asking everyone that I'm interviewing for this podcast. So the question that I have is, what would you tell Jeff from 15 years ago? Like, what piece of advice would you give yourself 15 years ago that you know now that you didn't know then?
Okay, so 15 years ago, I was just getting, just getting into yoga and kind of in.
Okay, maybe like new teacher. Like when you were just starting to teach.
Okay. Like what piece of advice I would tell myself?
Yeah, so based on everything that you know now, if you could go back in time and give past Jeff one piece of advice based on what present Jeff knows, what would you tell past Jeff?
Okay. I would just give me a second. That's a good question.
Thanks. it's a hard one. Cause then you start thinking about the butterfly effect and how everything would change.
But just
take that element out of it.
Okay. Cause I would probably tell myself that like 15 years ago, and then this is something I was teaching and it's like, I would tell myself, play the long game. And, and what I mean by that, when I say play the long game is that if this is something one really loves, which is something I really love, it's to like really start to look at it in a bigger picture sort of thing.
Okay.
And by bigger picture, I mean, like, think about, like, the teaching decisions I would make. Think about, like, the social decisions I would make and adjust my life accordingly. Like, I remember, you know, like, 25, 26, woo, like, I'm working. I'm going to teach 10 classes. I'm going to go out every night. I'm going to, like, be hanging out. Like, I would have been like, you know, save your voice.
Mm-hmm.
Don't put energy out all the time. Stay in. And just like, if this is something you want to do like long term, you know, keep on practicing. Put that, you know, don't forget to practice. Don't forget to practice hard. Don't forget to practice smart.
Mm-hmm.
Be smarter about relationships with studio owners and colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff. You know, like I've made some big mistakes there and said things I shouldn't have said and like, you know, sent emails or made blog posts that were super stupid at the time. And I wasn't thinking long-term, right? So, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, that's great advice.
Yeah.
I love that.
Thanks.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's almost been like 2 hours. So, and I could keep talking to you. Like I could just keep picking your brain on stuff. So maybe we'll have to do a part two at some point.
But. Sure. You could break this into two parts. We do like part 3 and 4 or something. But it was a real blast. And anyway, I can help you out. It's always a pleasure for me.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, man.
All right. There's the interview with Jeff Ma. I hope that you guys enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed recording it. I hope that you learned a ton about, you know, life as a yoga teacher, the possibilities that you have as a yoga teacher, what it's like to own a studio, and all that sort of thing. If you want to learn more about Jeff Ma, check out his personal website at jeffmah.com, JeffMah.com, or you can check out the Yoga Lounge's website, which is www.theyogalounge.ca. I'll put links on the show notes for that, so you can check out the MBOM website at mbomyoga.com. You can send me an email with questions, comments, feedback, anything like that. If you just want to say hi, I'm happy to hear from you. That's info@mbomyoga.com. And if you enjoy the podcast, which I really hope you do, please subscribe for the newsletter. It'll be weekly updates on the new podcast episodes that are coming out, cool blog posts up on the website, info about books that are coming out, and other exciting happenings like that. So once again, that's www.mbomyoga.com, and you can just go to newsletter there and sign up. And as always, thank you so much for listening, for all of the support, and for being a part of the amazing MBOM community. I will see you in the next episode. Bye.